move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. It's Monday, and we're starting the week off with a fantastic show. During the first hour, we're going to be joined by Dr. Alejandros Gonsis. We're going to talk about sleeping in on the weekend does not fix sleep deficits created during the work week. This is an important discussion. So many people out there think they can burn the candle at both ends during the week and catch up on the weekends, and this may not be the best thing. Then we're going to change it up. For a short time, we're going to talk about there's evidence of a media blitz to help promote genetically modified foods as being safe inside the United States. We're going to talk about that briefly. And then we're going to be joined by Dr. Christian Roberts to talk about an interesting study that shows that when it comes to cholesterol, fitness is more important than body weight. And this is something we've been talking about in this community for a long time. So great show today. First, let's invite Dr. Alejandros Vagonsis to the show. How you doing, Dr. Vagonsis?
Very good. Just a small correction. My first name is Alexandros.
Alexandros. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes, I am
that's
known.
Right.
I'm known to make mistakes. So that keep me in tune here, Alexandros Vagonsis. And
yeah, very good.
We're talking to you today. Are you where are you today?
Oh, I'm in Europe. I'm in Greece.
Okay, you're in Greece. Okay, very good. Let's talk about this research that you and your colleagues have done. Very, very interesting. And it is a quite a problem here in the United States, and I'm sure in other countries as well. People have work commitments, and they work long hours, stay up late with the anticipation that, oh, this weekend I'll just sleep late Saturday and Sunday and I'll fix this problem. Is this common all over the world, or is this something uniquely American?
I think it's common in the developed countries, in the industrialized world, or Western countries. But, you know, Western countries is not enough. I'm sure it applies, you know, even in countries in Far East, like Japan and China and so forth. So basically, you know, we're talking that countries that they are in the developed world, that they have gone through the industrial revolution and the information technology revolution now. And so we're speaking, you know, for most likely, you know, the majority of our world. So I don't think, you know, it's a uniquely U.S. phenomenon.
Okay. Now, another thing that I think a lot of people will find interesting, and maybe even startling, is what in this particular study, what did you consider a short sleep duration for the during the week schedule?
Sure. Basically, you know, in terms of sleep restriction, we replicated our study that was published in 2004. What we did back then, you know, trying to mimic, you know, real life, we reduced the opportunity to sleep at night from 8 hours to 6 hours. So it was restricted by 2 hours. And this is in young, healthy people. On the average, you know, and this there is, of course, you know, a lot of individual variability, but on the average, we believe that a young person needs about 7 to 8 hours. A little bit more, a little bit less. But this is the average. This is the mean, as we say in statistics.
And I think a
so,
lot. Good. Okay, I'm sorry.
So what we did, you know, is we in the first study was published in 2004. We had people for 1 week shifting from 8 hours to 6 hours, and we saw all the impairments. You know that the individual is going through when he or she does that. What did we see? We see more sleepiness, daytime sleepiness. The people were feeling sleepy and tired. They were not performing well in a performance test. And also there was increase of inflammatory markers. Now, just not to become too scientific and too technical, inflammation is a condition which is useful to our body and to our mind, but only as a protection against, you know, a foreign invader, a bacterium, a virus, and so forth. But when we have an inflammatory response, for example, as lack of sleep, as we've demonstrated, or when we gain weight, just to connect to your previous program that I was listening, this is called a low-grade inflammation. That's not a good condition for our health and can promote atherosclerosis. It can promote cardiovascular problems and metabolic problems. So in that study, we demonstrated, you know, that lack of sleep is not only bad, you know, in terms of your functioning during the day, being able to carry out your daily activities, but it may have a long-term adverse impact on your health. So that was our first study.
Okay.
This lasted for 1 week.
I want to inject something here because I think that a lot of people will be shocked that 6 hours is considered short duration sleep, because I think there's a lot of people out there who live their lives in that 6 hour of sleep zone because they have children to get to bed, and then they think, the nighttime is the only time I get to sit and watch a little television, and they go to sleep at midnight, and they're up at 6 a.m. again because they have to get the kids up for school, and they do this consistently week in and week out. And I think that it's really important to note something here, that 6 hours is considered short duration sleep, and if you're getting 6 hours or less of sleep and think that you're doing well, you're not.
Absolutely right. The only qualification I have to add to what you just stated is that the 8 hours, as I said, is for young people. Now, if we move to someone who is 60 or 70 or 80, then, you know, there is an effect of age. There is a relationship between aging and sleep, and people sleep usually less, and also your system requires less sleep. But for the productive years and the reproductive years for men and women, 7 to 8 hours is what we believe, you know, is necessary. And in any way, you know, in our experiment, we gave to the subjects for 4 nights the opportunity to sleep for 8 hours. Then went to 6, and we found what I just told you. So absolutely what this says, and this was, you know, the title of our paper, it was that modest sleep loss. Not like, you know, I mean, if you stay up all night, you know, next day you cannot function.
Right.
If you sleep only 4 hours, you would know it. And although, you know, sometimes you hear this person, this president, this big businessman and so forth sleeps only 4 hours, we, as sleep people, we don't believe that. We don't believe that human beings can live, forget function, can exist with 4 hours of sleep for days and weeks.
Right.
That's no. So when you hear these stories, just make sure they don't apply to the physiology as we know it.
Right.
And we're talking for a very small decrease, really, you know, 1/4 or 25% of that. And that was significant because in previous studies, both by us and other groups, it has been demonstrated repeatedly, you know, that if you lose 1 night of sleep, not at all sleep, then the next day you have all these phenomena that we described, and even, you know, in a more severe form. So that's well known, and I think everyone feels it, and you can do it 1 night, 2 at the maximum, but then, you know, you got to go to bed no matter what. Nature will push you to bed. So the important here was, again, you know, in the first study and the second one that we replicated, this finding is just do what many people do and they think it's okay. That
right.
is not okay. That was the conclusion.
Now, obviously,
if you want me to come to this new study, basically, what we did is we replicated our first study. If you're interested about a little bit, you know, the design and the details, and if it's not, I can...
No. I am interested in the design, but there was something I wanted to inject here, because we're going to go into a break.
Sure.
When we come out of the commercial break, then we're going to talk about the study design and the findings. But, you know, one of the things that When we look at centenarians, individuals who live to 100 and beyond in good health, one of the salient characteristics is they still maintain high quality sleep architecture. We know that these individuals, they go to sleep at the same time, and really regimentation in sleep is very, very important. We know that centenarians, they go to sleep at the same time every night as they've done their entire lives. They rise at the same time every morning, and they maintain a healthy sleep architecture. So one would have to wonder if individuals age, let's say, poorly because they sleep poorly, or if they sleep poorly and then they age. But there's an interesting discussion here, as you point out, that we take it for granted that, well, as you age, you sleep worse. Well, maybe you sleep worse, and as such, you age.
Look, aging, you know, is a very complex phenomenon. Genetics play a role, nutrition play a role, exercise plays a role, and we believe also sleep. And I will agree with you that poor sleep or not paying attention to your sleep needs will end up in problems when you get older.
That's, yes.
We have evidence for that, and we can talk later on. So I agree with you. In fact, I'm going here to say something. Since I'm now in Greece, there was a program, I think it was in CNN or somewhere, in one of the Greek islands. They found a lot of people that were, you know, in their 90s or even 100. And what they found in terms of sleep is what you just said. Regular time to go to bed, regular time to get out of bed, and many times napping, brief napping during the day, which we believe is also helpful. So good sleep at night and some rest during the day is important for health and good aging.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the design of the study and what you found. We're talking today, during this hour, with Dr. Alexandros Vgontsis, and we're talking about the effects of sleep deprivation during the week and whether or not you can recover by having a few longer sleep duration days. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
This is one of those things I think it's going to be 30 years from now, and people are going to go, oh, damn, this didn't work out right.
He's serving up an all-you-can-eat buffet of brain food.
It's gotten worse for us who are overweight because we're now paying our fair share for things that we didn't have to before.
Get it while it's hot.
The fact that there's only 50% of the population is obese, that means the other 50% is doing something different.
You're listening to your daily dose of wisdom. Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore.
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Live-On Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lee.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Alexandros Pagansis. We're talking about those sleep deficits that you create during the week because of duty, responsibility, work, and so on, and you think you can sleep in on the weekends and just catch up. Is it possible, or is it possible at all to reverse a sleep deficit? So, talk about the how you structured this study to look at the effects of the work week, sleep deprived days, and then catching up on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. Yes, what we did is, you know, we put the subjects, young subjects, healthy subjects. No medications, no any diseases as far as we know. And we put them in the sleep lab for 13 consecutive nights. The first 4 nights, we allow them to sleep to up to 8 hours. Then we send them home. Sorry, I have to say, on the 4th day and night, we did what we call 24-hour measurements of sleep, inflammatory markers in the blood, sleepiness during the day, and performance, among other things. We also measured appetite and so forth, but I will not go into that now. Then, for the next 5 days, we curtail their sleep from 8 hours to 6 hours.
How did you do this? With an alarm clock? Just wake them up early?
Oh, no, they're in the lab, so we have technicians there all the night. So they went to bed the same time as the previous 4 nights, and then 2 hours earlier, let's say if they went to bed, it was about 11 o'clock. So in that baseline, you know, in the regular sort of sleep time, we allow them to stay in bed until 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Now, in the period where we cut down on sleep, we wake them up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So we curtail their sleep by 2 hours. Then after this 5-day week, again, we repeated their measurements of sleepiness, blood, performance, etc. And then we gave them 3 nights the opportunity to sleep for 10 hours. So 8 hours, which is, let's say, the normal, then 6 hours, and then 10 hours. And what we found is, you know, that after 5 days, which is really, you know, the work week.
Right.
After 5 days of sleeping only 6 hours, we replicated, and this is good, you know, in science we need replication. We saw the same thing. Sleepiness, impairment in performance, and inflammation. So that's good, you know. So what we published in 2004, we saw it again. And you know, in science, we need replication.
Right.
Because, you know, sometimes findings, as you know, can be random,
right,
or just good luck. Then, when we repeated these measurements after 2 full nights, where we allowed 10 hours of sleep, we saw some benefits. What were the benefits? The benefits were they were less sleepy. They were like back to their baseline before the sleep restriction. The inflammation markers were down, which is good. But unfortunately, performance, as we measure it in a, like it's a computer test that lasts 10 minutes, and you know, on the screen you can see numbers and so forth, you got to hit a button and so forth. There, the impairment did not come back. In other words, you know, after two good nights of about 10 hours of sleep, people's performance was not back to baseline.
Hmm.
And that is obviously, you know, of concern.
Sure.
Because the subjects were feeling less sleepy. They were saying, I'm doing fine, I'm back to normal. But the test did not support that. So that's the other thing. You know, it's not only because if you are sleepy, maybe you know it, and you are saying, okay, I'm sleepy, maybe I'm not going to drive, I'm not going to do this or that, that requires my full attention. But if I don't feel sleepy, but my performance is not back to normal, then you may suffer from things that you're not even aware.
Well, and interestingly enough, for those of you who aren't aware of this, but, you know, the United Parcel Service, UPS, dropped a plane out of the sky several months ago, and the NTSB released the black box recorder of the two pilots that died, obviously. And the last things they were talking about was that they wished that UPS would change the way they schedule pilots because these two guys were so exhausted from their flying that week that they were both so tired, and they would just verbally say, man, I wish we could get more sleep. And that, and then shortly thereafter, the plane crashed. So you have individuals who are forced to work long hours for whatever reason. Then they get home and they, you know, the company feels, well, they've got 3 days to catch up. They should be back to normal. And here we see that their ability to respond to conditions and interpret conditions is still impaired, even though they've had 3 days to sleep longer. This is a perfect example of what you're talking about, Dr. Vagantis.
It's a very tragic example, and to be honest with you, I was not aware that this was what was found, you know, this black box for this very sad case that you are reporting. But indeed, you know, one of the, if you want, the implications of our study is that people that work in, that their work requires, you know, high alertness,
right,
and high levels of performance. These data should be looked at it seriously. This can be pilots. This can be
taxicab
drivers, drivers, you know, truck drivers. Can be locomotive engineers. I recall some years ago, we were asked to test, you know, locomotive engineers in commercial trains, and some of the stories we heard, you know, it's like. Don't repeat them so the public doesn't get scared, but they will tell me, you know, that the train will be going for a couple of miles and both, you know, the engineer as well as his assistant will be asleep. You know, and you understand what this could mean. I remember years ago there was an accident early in the morning, and this is, you know, a bad time early in the morning in Philadelphia, city, a major city in Pennsylvania.
Sure, sure.
And so, you know, we can bring a lot of examples, some of them publicized, some of them not ever coming to the light of publicity and of the press. So, yes, I agree with you, and we don't want here, you know, like to super alert or alarm the people, but yes, sleep is important. It's important for the daytime functioning, for driving, and I'm sure, you know, it's even more important when it comes that you have to operate, you know, machinery or
Canes
or
Let me ask you a question, Dr. Vagantis. So when these individuals were allowed to sleep later, did they find it easy to sleep later, or did they awake and then lay there potentially vigilant and then doze back off, or were they able to actually sleep later? Because this is another thing that I noticed.
Correct.
If just because you have time to sleep later doesn't mean the body wants to.
Correct. Well, what we found is, as a general, for the next 3 nights, the subjects slept more. But their sleep after the first night was not of that good quality. What do I mean by that? There was more awakenings, there was less deep sleep, and so forth. So, in terms of quantity, they got more sleep. But the second or the third night, their sleep was not of that depth that we usually see, you know, under regular and normal circumstances. As I said, you know, they were young people, they didn't have any problems and so forth. Now, if we go So they were well selected. It was a select population. Now, if we go to the general population, to real people, who are some of them, you know, they may be stressed, they may have other demands and so forth, such a thing may not be possible, you know, because, for example, we know people, they stay up all night because, you know, they got to work shift work and so forth. Then we do know that during the day their sleep is poor.
Right.
So the nighttime regular sleep is irreplaceable. Yes, we can do things. We can drink more coffee or we can take a nap. And we saw in a study in 2007 that after a night of total sleep loss, 2 hours of napping helps. But again, it's not the same. It's not equal as having your regular sleep every night.
I want to take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about the markers that you looked at specifically for these groups, because one of them is very interesting to me. We're talking with Dr. Alexandros Vagantzis. We're talking about your ability to recover after a deficit in sleep created by your work week. And maybe we can even come up with some sound solutions as well, other than quitting your job. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
They say that tough love is sometimes the best advice. Well, he's got the toughest love.
Why you should not drink diet sodas, it's very, very simple. If you don't subscribe to the idea that they're toxic, fine. Then subscribe to the idea that they cause a derangement in insulin response. If you don't subscribe to that, fine. Then subscribe to the idea that they spike insulin. I mean, it's like, do whatever you want, but why do we need science to tell us to stop consuming more chemicals? Are you really that pathetically addicted to something that's not good for you? Then say it. Say, I'm addicted to these things that I can't help myself. I know they're bad for me. I'm going to keep using them, and then we don't have to do research.
You're listening to Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore.
Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. Whey Natural USA. Extreme Formulations is the only company with a dairy protein product with a disclosed 50% whey to 50% micellar casein ratio. It's Ultra Peptide 2.0. It comes in 9 amazing flavors, including the newest lemon pie and butterscotch. Get free shipping on any order size inside the USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ultra Peptide 2.0 banner ad now. Canadian listeners can also get free shipping on 2 or more jugs of Ultra Peptide 2.0. Don't wait too long because this special won't last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad today.
Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Build muscles, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Alexandros Vagantzis right now about the deficit created in sleep during the work week and whether or not you can actually catch up on the weekends. Later in the show, you're not going to want to miss this other great interview when I interview Dr. Christian Roberts. Recent research shows that when it comes to cholesterol, fitness is more important than weight, which this audience is going to love this discussion because we are all very fit in the superhuman nation. Dr. Vagantzis, you looked at cortisol. I mean, I understood the reason for looking at interleukin 6, which is an inflammatory marker. But you looked at cortisol also, and obviously we know that insulin is implicated in poor sleep and poor sleep architecture. Why cortisol? And is cortisol responding to the inflammation caused by lack of sleep, or is it intrinsically increased because of lack of sleep?
Well, there's a couple of things I need to clarify with you. First, why did we measure cortisol? We measure cortisol because cortisol is a hormone of stress. It's a stress hormone.
Okay.
If we are stressed, cortisol goes up. If you are stressed because the next day you got to take a test, or you went through a divorce or through a disease, or just have an operation, your cortisol is up. So one of our questions was, and this has been a question for us now for more than 15 years, is when you lose sleep, does your cortisol go up? I have to say here that the field is not unanimous, or at least was not unanimous in that. In our studies, and I can talk about five studies where we have deprived people in all sort of different ways and designs, cortisol did not go up. Our expectation was that cortisol would go up. Now, why it didn't go up? Because, in our opinion, the way we deprived individuals in the lab is not stressful. In other words, you know, these guys that didn't have the next day, you know, go to work, perform, do, you know, their daily activities, take care of families. Remember also these were young people. And if I recall well, most of them, you know, without families and so forth. So a non-stressful sleep loss or sleep deprivation is not associated with cortisol. However, it's our hypothesis that we can expect that if we are to mimic the real life where someone, you know, doesn't sleep enough, but then the next day you got to run to work, you got to take care of your kids, family, and all other things, then it might be a different story.
Because, in other words, the lack of sleep could set you up to not be able to cope with stress adequately.
Correct. And also because, you know, you're dealing with a stressful situation, you know. While in our situation, subjects were allowed, you know, to relax, sit, watch TV, play games, and so forth. That we believe is not really as stressful as having to deal with real life. So there it was contrary to our expectation and hypothesis, but I gave you my interpretation. Now, as far as, you know, the inflammation marker, interleukin 6, which is a pro-inflammatory cytokine that is produced by immune cells, but also in the brain and elsewhere, and it is a marker, you know, of whether, as I told you, there is this low-grade inflammation in the system, which is not good. This was elevated. This was reason. And we consider that as problematic because I told you there are other studies, large epidemiologic studies, where they have shown, for example, if your interleukin 6 is elevated to the level that we found in our study, this may mean shorter lifespan, may mean cardiovascular problems, may mean metabolic problems, and so forth. So that this marker was elevated after 5 days of sleep restriction and came down after 2 days of more sleep, mm-hmm. says two things. More sleep helps. We cannot say it doesn't help at all. That would be a mistake. So our data says it helps, but only partially. Now, a question that remains to be examined is, how does our system in the long run, and this is now the real life, and this is a very difficult study to be done, if you do it week after week, month after month.
Right.
For example, if you do that, okay, 5 days, you sleep less, 6 hours. Then on the weekend, more. I mean, let's say your inflammation goes up, then goes down, then goes up, then goes down. This yo-yo effect, as far as we know, biology, nature doesn't like that. Biology and nature likes stability, likes homeostasis, likes balance. So this up and down is not something, you know, that we hypothesize again, is harmless, potentially is harmful. And I want to point that in our paper, in our discussion, we point to studies by Dr. Carol Everson from the University of Chicago, where she examined this pattern I'm talking about in rats.
Right.
Like, you know, giving them, depriving them of sleep, giving them sleep. Depriving them of sleep, giving them sleep. And this happened for a couple of months or so, if I recall well, you know, for 2 or 3 months.
Right.
And she found that down the road, even after, you know, these rats, they were sleeping okay, there was a lasting effect on their system. Like, you know, they lost weight. They developed all sorts of problems in terms of the immune system and so forth. So I'm saying that because I want to raise some caution that even for the markers that long sleep appears to improve, however, this repeated pattern, sleep restriction, sleep recovery, sleep extension, inflammation, no inflammation, is not something that I believe is harmless. In the long run, it's going to be harmful. And this is another thing, since we talked, you know, earlier about longevity, that we have to consider.
You know, and this is really, because when we were talking earlier and now I'm thinking, okay, so what can people, there are people out there who are going to be even more stressed out now when they hear this show, because they're working a night shift and they're thinking, my gosh, you know, I try to catch up on the weekend and obviously I'm hearing it's not enough. And my next question was going to be to you, okay, so for employers, which this is obviously going to become a discussion in the forefront in the upcoming years as we look at managing healthcare costs and employers start to realize, well, we have a role in keeping our employees healthy, that it's value to us. So I was thinking, well, maybe we have to sleep an equal amount. So in other words, 4 short days, 4 long days where they can structure a shift so that the person has 4 days or 5 days. Do you think that a study could be designed to see and look at what compensatory period of time must be achieved of longer duration sleep till everything comes back to a level where now we could say, okay, this person is completely recovered. Now they can work 3 or 4 days and work longer?
Sure. It can be done and it should be done by us or by someone. Because we need to answer this very important question. After how many nights of extended sleep, we are back completely to normal. You know that we chose 2 days, and then the third day, you know, repeating all the measurements that we needed.
But that's the work.
Two
that's the
nights
work
of an interrupted sleep.
Yeah.
We chose that to mimic real life. I mean,
right.
The weekend. You know, that is 2 nights, 2 days. But also because based on our previous experiments, 1 night is not enough. So we know that. 1 night, let's say if you are totally sleep deprived, let's go back to what you said, you know, shift work, okay? I'm tonight on and I don't sleep. And then I say, because I don't want to sleep during the day, because, you know, I have to do this or to do that, or because I cannot sleep during the day, there are people that cannot sleep during the day.
Right.
I'm going to sleep tonight. That's not enough. That we know that. Our study show that. Previous studies by us and others have shown that. One night is not enough in terms of sleepiness. You're going to be sleepy, you're going to be tired, you're going to feel tired. So at least you need two nights, that's for sure, to reduce sleepiness, to reduce inflammation and so forth. The question is, in order to be completely, let's say, 100% back to normal, maybe you need a third night,
right?
Maybe you need a fourth night. That's something we need really to study further. I don't have an answer at this point.
I know.
I'm sure you know the system at some point recovers completely, but after how many nights it remains to be studied.
Because it makes perfect sense to me that if someone is burning the candle at both ends for 5 days and sleeping late at three, and these markers of inflammation are just starting to come back into where they were, the zone, that we need more sleep time to kind of push the, you know, if you think of it as a pendulum, the pendulum swings all the way to the right, all the way to the left. Right now what we have is it swings all the way to the left and then just goes to the middle, then back all the way to the left. So you're accumulating this deficit. Your net effect is that you're accumulating more deficit because you're not getting enough sleep. And I think that companies worldwide who have second and third shifts because that is what is required to be competitive today, they need to look at this and go, we need to find an answer to this question, because we will pay less for healthcare if we help people stay healthy. And it could be that people have to work 3 days on and 5 days off. Who knows what that is? But we need to find out what that is if we're going to keep employing these graveyard shifts in industry today.
I absolutely agree with you. You know, shift work is not in our biology, is not in our nature. Before, you know, the Industrial Revolution and before electricity, people go to bed in dark, and they will wake up with the dawn, with the first light
right out.
Now, that's not the case, and we know that. But, you know, as anything in life, in history, progress is always, you know, has a price. But I think now we are at the level, and we're going to be more in the future if we study these things, this phenomena carefully, that we can take measures that can minimize, I do not know if it can eliminate, but minimize the adverse effects of our technological process, progress and advances. Let me tell you one thing, you know, for shift work, because
please,
we know that, not from our studies, but from other studies in Sweden and so forth, they have shown that people that they do, you know, shift work for years, they are more prone to heart attacks, they are more prone to strokes, they are more prone to develop obesity, atherosclerosis, and so forth. So we do know shift work, and particularly, you know, when this is like, you know, missing your nighttime sleep, because, yes, there is a reason why, you know, we have to go to bed at night and not during the day. This we already know has an impact on your health. So if on top of that you add a restriction, then the impact is multiplied. So we do need to study this phenomenon more carefully, more extensively, because I think at the end, you know, we can find some solutions that we cannot go back, you know, to society without electricity. That's
right.
Obvious. We cannot go back to without planes or without trains and all that. But on the other hand, you know, we should not hurt ourselves. We should not hurt the length of our lives and the quality of our lives.
I agree 100% with you. We're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. We're talking with Dr. Alexandros Vagantzis. We're talking about the traditional lifestyle of anybody who works late or even who works a regular schedule but stays up late because of family and social demands, community demands, and so on. If you're the latter, if you're not working a third shift or a second shift, you have to find ways to get to sleep earlier. We'll address this when we come back, but this is equally important because those of you who are not shift workers who just stay up late and are only getting 6, 7, 5 hours of sleep during the week, there's an opportunity for you to protect your own health. You're not at the mercy of an employer. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There's something comforting about knowing he's out there.
Government is in place because it assumes that people are too stupid to care for themselves.
By your side.
Government has to take up the parental role of teaching people what to do.
Fighting the good fight.
Government has to get out of people's pantries, first of all. They can't legislate health.
He's Carl Lenore on Superhuman Radio.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See Eye Drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find Can-See Eye Drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. Can-See Eye Drops. The name says it all.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. Whey Natural USA.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back.
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's the one and only
Dr. Vagantzis, you heard what I said going into the break. There are a lot of people out there who don't work a shift job. They get home at 5 o'clock. They have children. They have duties. And they stay up late anyway, sometimes till midnight, watching television shows, get to bed, they get 6 hours sleep, and they wake up in the morning and start all over again. And these individuals, especially when children are involved, very rarely have the opportunity to sleep in on the weekends because, let's face it, when kids are young, they get up at the crack of dawn no matter what's going on. So to those individuals, what would you say to them?
I do not know if I have a magical solution, you know, magical bullet for all these problems. For sure, you know, what I do know as a physician, that if someone, you know, cannot get enough sleep and doesn't feel good the next day and so forth, he has to do something about that, because then he cannot be a good parent, a good worker, he cannot enjoy his or her life. So that's important. Now, some practical points, I do not know how effective or completely effective is, if, let's say, at night you slept less than what you need, a brief nap during the day, excuse me, may be helpful. We have found in similar studies like the one we have been talking today that napping during the day helps. So napping 30, 45 minutes an hour, if that's possible, then it helps, and we recommend that. That's number one. Sleeping a little bit more over the weekend, if you can do that, that helps. Other things, you know, that you can do is, I just heard on one of your commercials talking about fitness, like in one of the programs you will talk about fitness.
Right.
We do believe that exercise, and I don't mean you have to become a marathon runner or a weightlifter or a super football player, just regular, mild, moderate exercise, brisk walking, go to the gym, and these kind of things can help greatly both the quality of sleep as well as your energy levels and alertness. In fact, in our previous studies, we have shown that for the same amount of weight, and we know, you know, overweight people are more prone to feel tired and sleep and fatigued. Those people that were exercising, they were doing better compared to those that they were not exercising.
Sure, sure.
So again, you know, we go back that there are some things that are important in life. I know we're all busy, but on the other hand, health is important because if you don't have health, you have nothing, correct?
Right,
I think we're
right.
Going to our grandma's saying. So you got to get your sleep, you got to get your exercise, and you got to pay attention to your nutrition. Otherwise, you know, we'll become a society who is tired, who is overweight, who is stressed. You know, we didn't talk about that, but in other studies we have shown the association between stress and sleep, and stress is not good for sleep, for inflammation, for cortisol, for everything. So we cannot say, okay, that's the way we're going to live. We have to address that. Of course, you know, for each individual, there is a specific answer, and this is now, you know, the current trend in medicine. We call it personalized medicine. But in general, what I can say is, you know, common sense. Sleep when you can. Don't think sleep is luxury. Take care of your body, exercise, eat correctly, and that's the best you can do.
You know what's really interesting? Two things that come to mind. First of all, if you look at dogs and cats and animals in general, especially dogs and cats, because we can observe them because they're domesticated, they nap in the afternoon, right? They lay down in the sun. They go to sleep for a little while. They get up.
Sure.
And chances are, before the Industrial Revolution, when we were, and before civilization of humans, when we were more like animals, when we, perhaps we go back to the Paleolithic era, since that's what the new nutritional guidelines are coming from, that seem to make a lot of sense for us. I'm sure that we napped. We didn't have a schedule. We didn't have a boss who said, hey, you've got to be here at work at a certain time. We napped, number one. That's the first thing. The second thing is, going back full circle to aging and sleep. The interesting thing about aging and sleep is quite often a lot of the research done on centenarians, people who live beyond 100, are always done in what I would consider intact primitive cultures. When they did all the research on the Okinawans, they focused exclusively on the Okinawan diet. What they failed to realize, and what I realized after reading the research and learning more about the Okinawans, is the individuals that they were talking about were very primitive in that many of them didn't even have electricity. So that means that when it got dark out, other than a fire, they slept. And when it got light out and the sun rose, they awoke. And they spent a lot of time outdoors, which means that they were very active. The funny thing is that no one paid attention to these two lifestyle characteristics. They just went, oh, well, the Okinawans eat a lot of fish and rice. That must be the answer. No, the answer is they went to sleep when it got dark. The suprachiasmatic nuclei, evolutionarily, we are designed to do that. And they were active. They were out all day long. We are designed to do that. And we are mismatched for our social structure today, quite frankly.
I agree absolutely with what you said. And let me add just one piece of information about the napping. It's not a cultural characteristic. We have done studies, not only us, many labs in the United States, and we have measured sleepiness throughout the day after a good night's sleep. And we do know that between 2 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon in healthy people, this is the maximum daytime sleepiness. There is physiological sleepiness, independent if you had a meal, independent if you had a good night, because we control for all that. So human biology tells us, yes, at night this is the time when we sleep more, but also in the middle of the day, and I'm saying about between 2 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, in all subjects we have examined and other labs, we see there a dip of sleepiness. Deep become physiologically sleepy. And I'll ask you also to do this observation at work, if you're working with many co-workers. Many people, you know, at 3 o'clock or something, they feel sleep and tired. They said, okay, I have a hard day. They go get, grab coffee, you know, then they said they feel better.
Oh, there's a whole industry that these new energy drinks, they say, oh, do you get tired at 3 or 4 o'clock? Don't have coffee. Have an energy, 5-hour energy will keep you awake for the rest of the day. We constantly think we're smarter than nature. We're smarter than our bodies, and this is where we get in trouble.
Correct, I agree, and let me tell you that. What I believe is not this energy drinks or the coffee that makes you feel better. But when you are beyond this physiological sleepiness, then you start to feel better, but you attribute it to this energy drinks or to the coffee and so forth. So, indeed, you know, we have to observe nature, we have to observe biology and psychology, and this is where we'll find our answers.
Very, very good discussion. So, in summary, I guess what you're hoping people take away from this is to preserve their sleep however they can, whenever they can, because it will pay them back by keeping them healthy.
Absolutely.
Wonderful research. Real quick, before we end the interview, did you look at other hormonal markers? Did you look at insulin? Did you look at sex steroids? Or did you just exclusively look at the inflammatory markers and cortisol?
We have looked at other markers related to appetite and food, but we're working on the analysis of these markers, and soon we'll come up with our next paper.
And I knew you were going to say that, so I want to invite you back now ahead of time. Will you please keep us in touch?
Thank you.
Yeah, no. I'll make sure that Ginny reaches out to you after today's interview so that you can keep us in touch when you're ready to publish that paper, okay?
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being on the show today, Dr. Vagantzis.
You're welcome.
Take
care. Have a good
day. All right, so we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what's going on in the media right now, if you haven't noticed it already, which is, quite frankly, nothing more than a media blitz to try to promote the safety and need for genetically modified foods. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Carl Lenore.
The FDA has exceeded all of its previous levels of being sinister and corrupt by trying to poison this country by forcing us to eat genetically modified foods without knowing their GMO foods, while trying to obstruct our access to natural foods that are grown right in our hometown.
Empowering the people and telling it like it is.
They're corrupt, they're sinister, they're disgusting. And we're never going to have a politician with any real chutzpah to stop the FDA. That's the sad part. So we have to stop them ourselves. The pressure has to push back. Keep supporting your family farm.
Only on Superhuman Radio.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be joined by Dr. Christian Roberts. We're going to talk about how the realities of cholesterol is what I'd like to call this, because we hear so many mixed messages about cholesterol. And one of the things that we know in this audience is that cholesterol is not the devil. And quite frankly, your level of fitness will be more important on the effects of cholesterol on your body than body weight itself. And that should be a great relief to many of you out there. But what I want to address right now is that there is a concerted effort out there, and I don't know who is at the wheel. I have to agree, I guess, that Monsanto is one of the companies at the wheel. Companies like them and Syngenta have the most to lose from this genetically modified food discussion than anybody else. But I also have to believe that government is involved, because we know that government is by and large corrupted by industry. And as a result, they are helping to promote industry's positions on these sort of things. And you're going to start seeing more and more articles, I predict, in the news, mainstream publications, talking about trying to confuse you by making you think that the jury is still out on whether or not genetically engineered foods and the accompanying herbicides are maybe safe. And we're seeing this already. On the 20th, the Seattle Times published an article by Sandy Doughton that was designed to look like an objective review of the research when it's not. Many, many things that Ms. Doughton failed to recognize. Maybe she's just not informed enough. Anybody could be misled. Or maybe she is hoping to garner the appreciation of an industry. I don't know. But the article, in her article, she points out that a panel of 18 scientists reviewed all the genetically modified research out there and feel that it is generally accepted that it is not dangerous. After careful review of the scientists in question, 17 of the 18 had clear conflicts of interest, including receiving money from the chemical industry directly. She does not give much weight to the emerging research that is showing that herbicides like glyphosate are well understood endocrine disruptors, and as such pose great physical harm to the human condition. She does not recognize the research that has been done that shows that these drugs, by accident, right? We're being sprayed with drugs. These herbicides like glyphosate, sold as Roundup, have been shown to actually affect the germline of female rodents, which predicts that it'll probably affect the germline of humans as well. She does not recognize the science that shows now that glyphosate may be implicated in the development of Alzheimer's. And if you don't believe that, one thing is for sure, it can cause your body to be malabsorb minerals like zinc, because that's one of the ways that it works. And let's face it, I mean, zinc has specific roles in the body. So people who are exposed to glyphosate are possibly being exposed to malabsorption of minerals. She does not recognize any of the research that is coming out now that's saying, you know what, we need to understand this better before we subject a population, or in this case, a world, to it. She ignores that most of the major developed countries who we see as peers have abandoned genetically engineered foods and specifically glyphosate. She cites that glyphosate is relatively safe because it breaks down in the soil rapidly, and that has been disproved. In fact, I want to say it was one country that actually sued Monsanto and won, showing that up to a year later, glyphosate was still detectable in soil. I'm trying to think what country it was, because one of the early campaigns of Roundup was that it was as safe as table salt or something like that. And because of that, several countries did their own research, and I want to say it was Spain or France or someplace that did the research and forced Monsanto to stop claiming that. We don't hear about that here in the United States, by the way, ironically, right? You'd think that countries would share information. Well, you found this out. It saves us from doing the work and so on. But they found that glyphosate was still detectable in soil as much as 10 to 15% up to a year later. We know that there's a recent study done in Germany where they tested the urine of people living in the cities, and they tested positive for relatively high amounts of glyphosate. And the interesting thing about that is a lot of the research out there showing glyphosate's dangers show that it's dangerous at 4 parts per million. And this is much, 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 much lower than we're seeing in populations that are exposed to it and accumulated in their body. So one can only believe that Sandy Doughton is not informed well enough, or she was sent out to do a job, to write a piece that played down the possible dangers of genetically modified foods, and more specifically, the herbicide Roundup. And it makes you wonder, is, you know, what's going on here? I found something really interesting. I had planned on talking about this today, because my next guest could not come on until the half hour mark. And ironically, Shauna Young, Dr. Shauna Young, who's been a guest on my show and worked with children on the autism spectrum, reposted or shared a placard on my wall today that said, according to the Harvard School of Public Health, these are the deeply concerning effects of genetically modified foods. Now, the thing I find interesting is none of this showed up in the article that was published on the 20th in Seattle, Washington. GMOs increase food allergies. GMOs can spread uncontrollably and cause damage to biodiversity. We're seeing this already. GMOs increase the use of toxic agricultural chemicals. GMOs introduce exotic genes and organisms into the environment. GMOs do not increase food security, interestingly enough, and traditional breeding has greater genetic potential than genetically modified organisms. And this is something that is played down in the media. This is something that's played down on purpose. It has to be on purpose because people in the media have the same information that I do and that you do. And you have to ask yourself, why aren't they talking about these things? Why are so many of these things so obviously ignored? And then you have to ask yourself, well, why was this most recent march on Monsanto, march against Monsanto, completely blacked out from the media, blacked out from Facebook, blacked out from Twitter, blacked out everywhere except Al Jazeera's website? And you have to realize that there is a huge press on to convince those who are uninformed that genetically modified foods are a necessity. Genetically modified foods are probably safe, because this is what they always play out. Well, these things appear to be safe. They do not appear to be dangerous. And that genetically modified foods are as nutritious and beneficial as conventionally grown foods, and so we should embrace them. And I wonder how they reconcile with themselves the vast amount of information that's coming out. And let's say some of these research papers on both sides have agendas. So let's strip out 50% on both sides and just look at 50% that clearly have no conflicts of interest and so on. I predict you'll find a lot less conflicts of interest on the side asking the questions about whether they're safe or not than the ones that are saying they are safe. Because the ones that say they are safe are quite often funded by or influenced by the industry. Because let's face it, we as people, we don't gain anything from eating or not eating genetically modified foods intrinsically financially. The only group that gains from this financially are the groups that are promoting their safety because they want you to eat the stuff. So you have to ask yourself, then why are all these people so opposed to genetically modified foods that they're coming out and they're paying for research to investigate this to a greater degree? And maybe 50% of them do have agendas. They hate Monsanto. They hate big companies. So they're just looking. But the other 50% of those research papers perhaps are valid and are done specifically to learn the answers. So let's say it's just 50-50. Let's say 50% of the people have accurate research that shows that they're relatively safe, and 50% of the people have accurate research that shows that they're relatively dangerous. 50% of the research shows that the ability to grow genetically modified foods produces a greater value per acre of crop, and the other group says, no, it doesn't. If that's the simple truth, shouldn't we be waiting to find out what is the fact? Wouldn't you think that that's what you would like? If you knew something had a 50-50 chance of hurting your child, would you say, well, go ahead and eat it, it's a 50-50 chance? Or would you say, you know what, there's other things that we can do, I don't want you to eat that? Because you always want to err on the side of caution. You always want to take the conservative approach and say, you know what, I'd rather be safe than sorry. And this has been a mantra of populations for a long time. Be safe than sorry. Be more cautious. A pound of prevention is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We have lived by these types of sayings, except when it comes to genetically modified foods. And I find it interesting that this government, through its corrupted arm of the FDA, will keep people from getting their hands on cancer drugs and drugs used in other countries that show efficacy and safety for certain diseases, and cite that it's dangerous. More research needs to be done before we expose people to that. And then with the flippidness of, this stuff is safe, they say, no, GMO is safe. It doesn't produce any harm. And we're going to go ahead and let a population eat this stuff. And when you start asking yourself those questions, you can't help. Forget about if you are a conspiracy theorist and you don't believe the government is corrupt or whatever it is you want to do, you still have to be sensible and say, you know, I really think that I don't know the answer. It's clear that the FDA doesn't know the answer. It's clear that the scientific community is divided on this subject. So I'd rather be safe than sorry. And this seems to me to be a logical approach, especially from a government standpoint that, quote unquote, is here to protect its people. But is it? Or are they there to protect industry? I have more to talk about this. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's Carl Lenore.
The brainless people at the FDA need to be convinced that arsenic is not good for humans to consume. Because the FDA feels a little bit more research needs to be done before we're considered that this particular arsenic is dangerous.
Only on Superhuman Radio.
Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Live-On Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com. Today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
A special offer from Rob Regish for Blueprint Power Hour listeners. Purchase 1 year of the Blueprint Bulletin and get the Blueprint 3.0 ebook for free. The first 100 subscribers will receive the Superhuman University Add 1 Inch to Your Upper Arms course and another surprise bonus when you order. Go to the BlueprintBulletin.com today or click the Blueprint banner ad on SuperhumanRadio.com and get on the road to Gainesville in the Fast Lane.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the Bio Age banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking about cholesterol, and I think that this audience is going to be very, very happy when they hear that your level of fitness plays a larger role in cholesterol and its effects on the body, especially negative effects, than perhaps weight itself. And we're going to get into that discussion even greater when we talk about how weight that's made out of muscle makes a big difference, which is something that this research paper may actually prove. Right now we're talking about the onslaught of propaganda that's being placed out there today to convince people that genetically modified foods may in fact be safe, or at least we don't know enough yet, and so you should trust them. And my problem with this whole notion of, you know, we're not sure yet, so let's not abandon them, is really the opposite of the way we normally live our lives when you think about it. I mean, if you're walking down a street and you see a grating in the sidewalk and it looks flimsy and it looks weak, you don't go, I'm going to go step right on that as I walk because there's a good chance that it'll hold me up. No, you go, you know what? There's a good chance it won't hold me up and I'm going to walk around it because I don't need to hurt myself. And these are the types of approaches we use in our life every single day. But this government is not using this approach for some reason. You have to ask yourself why. And what this really comes down to is this. Whenever I have this conversation, people always hit me back with the argument, but we have to feed the world. And I'm not going to stand here and even get into the debate with them about whether or not that's true or not. So instead, what I like to say to them is this. Look, I think that people who have no other choice but to eat GMO or die, then fine, give them GMO. But the rest of us, label it so we can make our own choices. And this is really where the rubber meets the road. If all of this propaganda about genetically modified foods being potentially safe, we don't know yet, and the use of glyphosate, Roundup, on everything, which, by the way, the whole purpose of using genetically engineered foods and glyphosate was that you could spray less herbicide, and that has come to be a falsehood because they're spraying more and more herbicide to do the same job, as we talked about on Casual Friday recently. So that didn't work. And it costs more for farmers to grow genetically engineered crops than it does conventional crops for so many reasons. And the yield is just minutely different per acre. But forget about all that, because that's the farmer's decision, right? They want to spend more money. That's fine. But let's talk about consumers. So you would say to yourself, gee, you know, if this stuff is dangerous, we don't know. If the stuff is safe, we don't know. So for those of us who like to go around the grating in the sidewalk and not take the chance to see if it'll hold us and fall through, we would like to be able to identify that grating in the sidewalk. We would like labeling. And you would think that this would be a no-brainer, that a government who is, you know, the FDA is always fighting with the supplement industry about labeling. Well, we need more oversight to label this stuff. We need to make sure that what they're putting in is what they say. They do all that. But then in the same breath, they say, well, no, you don't need to know whether or not you're eating genetically modified foods. Now, doesn't this hypocrisy make anyone question what's going on at the FDA? And I don't mean you and I, because we question it every day, right? We know that they're either corrupt or inept, and neither one of those are acceptable for an agency that's supposed to be protecting its people. But up on Capitol Hill, isn't anybody going, you know, this is really interesting. They have a double standard where they want more oversight on these industries because of labeling, and they want to have more control on compounding pharmacies because they want to make sure that they're doing the right thing, and they want to make sure that they have more oversight. But yet, when it comes to the genetically modified food discussion, they completely trust the industries, and they completely disregard any of the negative research. And keep in mind, this is completely the United States. Of course, France and all these other countries, they said, you know what? We're not sure. So we're going to walk around the grating instead of testing it to see if it holds us up and fall through the sidewalk. We're going to wait a little while longer. Now, keep in mind, these countries also play a role in feeding the world, right? It's not just the United States. I mean, you have to be foolish to think that just the USA has taken on the role of being the provider against world hunger. I mean, all these other countries are involved in this whole process of feeding the world. This is not we're America, we have to feed the world. No, all countries are involved to some degree in that process. Yet they don't see the need to use genetically engineered foods to accomplish that. So what I say that we need to do as a community when we have these discussions, with people is not necessarily get so entrenched in the science. Well, my science is this and their science is that, but just to acknowledge the fact that the scientific community is completely divided on this topic. And use the analogy or an analogy similar to, you know, if you thought that there was a 50-50 chance of something being poison, would you feed it to your kids and bet on the 50% chance that it's not? Or would you say, you know what, it's not worth it, I'll just find something else? Or use the analogy of the grading. If you're walking down the street and you saw a grading, you know, in the sidewalk, and it looked like it was broken, would you test it and see if it could hold you up and walk on it anyway? Would you walk around it and use the cautious approach? And they have to answer that question one of two ways. They either have to say, no, I'm reckless, I don't care about my life, or I'm reckless, I don't care about my kid's life. Or they're going to say, no, I'm cautious and I wouldn't feed my children that, or I'm cautious and I wouldn't risk falling through the sidewalk. And then you have to look at them and say, so how is it any different about genetically modified foods? If the scientific community is divided 50-50 and there's people on both sides say it's dangerous, it's not. It's poison, it's not. It costs more to grow the stuff, it costs less to grow. Then why wouldn't you err on the side of caution like France has done since the French study on the rats showing the development of tumors and organ failure in rats fed both genetically modified foods with Roundup on them, or Roundup by itself? And when they say, well, those rats, I heard in the media that those rats develop cancer easily. Yes, exactly. That's why they use them for cancer research. That's why all cancer researchers use that particular rat. So if it's valid in regular cancer research, why is it not valid in this discussion? But we really need to start making an impact. We really, really do. We need to start talking to people and getting them to logic this out, because we need a larger base of people asking for the labeling of genetically modified foods. We need this. Right now, it's a small vocal group and we are making some real ground. But just imagine if we got even 30 or 40% of this nation on board to say, you know, it's true, I don't really know a whole lot about genetically modified food, but what I do know is the scientific community is divided, and I think I'd rather be cautious, so I want labeling. If we could do this, then we could stop this process dead in its tracks. And isn't it right to have labeling, to know what you're eating? Why is this applicable to every other discussion about food except GMO? I don't know about you, but I'm really frustrated about it. And I just feel like it's a sad, sad day when people's health and the length of their lives is less important than big companies' profits like Monsanto, Syngenta, and the rest of them who stand to profit from this. And they are profiting from it. They're profiting right now from it, and they're afraid they're going to lose the battle and lose the grip because the rest of the world is saying no to them, so they have to dig in deeper here in the United States. They have to. And again, it could be 30 years from now, we find out, wow, all the worry about GMO, it turned out to be false. But why is the media treating the genetically modified food argument the same way they treated the tobacco argument? Instead of being the bastions of truth and discovery, they are actually contributing to the confusion and helping this particular agenda win a battle. I mean, look at tobacco. Look at other issues that we realize now are not healthy for people, and it took decades to come around to it, and all those lives lost. Look at the hydrogenated oil discussion, right? You have to ask yourself why the mainstream media is doing what they do best, and that is play to industry instead of to the people who watch their shows. And I'll tell you what. You turn off those shows because you don't like what they're talking about, and you'll see how fast. Someone told me that a fellow who has a big following recently said, you can't vote with your dollars, it's not fair, in particular about the genetically modified food discussion, because you are going to hurt farmers who just can't grow organic. And I say that is nonsense. That is complete nonsense. So that you should patronize farmers who don't grow organic and are growing genetically modified foods because you feel bad that they won't be able to sell their products? So should we smoke because the people at Philip Morris or some company are going to lose their job if more people don't start smoking? This is an idiotic position to take. I don't even want to say the guy's name because I like him. But I mean, this is an idiotic position to take. Well, you're going to hurt farmers if all you do is eat organic and non-GMO. Those farmers deserve to be in business, but they deserve to grow the things that we want to eat. Just like I'm not going to start smoking because some lady's going to lose her job at Philip Morris if I don't smoke. Terrible argument. Shame on him. I'm sorry. I'm not saying his name, but maybe some of you listen to him and you know what I'm talking about. But we need to really push back hard. We need to start convincing our family and our friends very simply. The argument is very simple. Don't get all caught up in the science. Just say, look, the scientific community is divided. Some say it's safe, some say it's not. Every other country out there has abandoned it because they want to sit and wait. Why are we not doing that as a country? Would you feed your child something if you knew there was a 50-50 chance that it was poison? Would you say, yeah, you know, I'm going to take a chance and it's not poison and feed my child? And every person with a child would say, of course not. And then use some other analogy to use the 50-50 approach and say, would you err on the side of caution or would you be reckless? And then we'll get people to start thinking, yeah, you know, I probably would err on the side of caution. I think it does present a value if we knew what's GMO and what's not until we know more. That's our mission. I think we can change the tide. I really, really do. I believe that with all my heart, but it takes an effort to carry the message forth. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll have Dr. Christian Roberts on. We're going to talk about cholesterol levels in overweight people versus fit people. Going to be a great discussion. Stay tuned.
He's asking the hard questions.
Where are the convictions for the drugs that are being used right now that are killing people?
The government is too afraid to answer.
You see all the attorneys. Hey, if you develop cancer after taking this supplement, call our law office because we got a class action suit coming together.
Carl Lenore.
What's wrong with you people?
On Superhuman Radio.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Extreme Formulations is the only company with a dairy protein product with a disclosed 50% whey to 50% micellar casein ratio. It's Ultra Peptide 2.0. It comes in 9 amazing flavors, including the newest lemon pie and butterscotch. Get free shipping on any order size inside the USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ultra Peptide 2.0 banner ad now. Canadian listeners can also get free shipping on 2 or more jugs of Ultra Peptide 2.0. Don't wait too long because this special won't last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad today.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, we did a show last year, a study that looked at high blood pressure levels in trained versus untrained individuals, and what we found out that was training kind of upregulates the plumbing, if you will, and that the negative effects seen in people who have disease states was not seen in those of us who train very hard and as a result may raise blood pressure from time to time. The discussion is going to change a little bit now to the effects of cholesterol as it relates to fitness and weight. We're being joined by Dr. Christian Roberts. How you doing, Dr. Roberts?
Good, Carl. How you doing?
Fantastic, fantastic. So let's talk about this study. First, explain how this study was designed, and then let's talk about the results that you learned.
So we designed the study to essentially try to get at this question about whether fitness or body weight is more important for cardiovascular and metabolic health. And so what we did was we recruited three groups of subjects. One group was lean and trained, so they had a BMI less than 25, and they did a minimum of 4 days a week of weight training. Another group was matched for the amount of training, so they also did 4 days a week of weight training, but they had a BMI above 27. The mean BMI was 30. And then we had a third group that didn't do any structured exercise program, and they also had a BMI greater than 27 with a mean of 30.
Okay, one question comes to mind. The group that was training 4 days a week and had a greater BMI than 27, were they assessed for the amount of muscle mass or lean body mass that made up that BMI?
Yes. So we did do DEXA scans, and the DEXA scan results showed that the overweight trained group did have more lean body mass than the lean trained group, and they had also more fat than the lean trained group.
Right.
So they had an elevated BMI, which was made up of more fat and more muscle.
I love it. And, you know, something that I've been saying on this show, in fact, the first 3 years I did this show, from 2005 through 2008, I signed off every episode by saying, muscle is metabolic currency, so get into the gym and make a deposit today. Because I've long believed that the amount of muscle you carry plays a role in whether or not you develop certain diseases or whether or not certain things affect you differently than the general population. And a study like this, I love studies like this because it begs the medical orthodoxy to start recognizing the importance of muscle, especially we've done shows on muscle mass and how it affects insulin sensitivity and so on. I love this kind of stuff. This is fantastic research that you're doing. Okay, so let's talk about what you found. You looked at what types of particles of cholesterol did you look at?
So let me just back up for a moment. So we actually haven't even published the main findings of the study. So the study that I'm describing now is actually kind of a side project from the main project.
Oh.
And so in the main project, we looked at a variety of cardiovascular and metabolic outcomes. And in this particular study, we were specifically interested in looking at how the HDL functioned as an antioxidant. So we know that, you know, we have the total cholesterol, and we have the LDL, which is considered the bad cholesterol, and we have the HDL, which is considered the good cholesterol. Well, the conventional wisdom is that higher levels of HDL are good and lower levels of LDL are good. But the fact is that there has been some recent studies that suggest that it's not only the amount of HDL that you have, it's whether the HDL is properly performing its functions.
Mm-hmm.
And HDL has three main functions. One of them is that it picks up cholesterol from the body's tissues and the artery wall and brings it back to the liver to get rid of. Another is that it's an anti-inflammatory, and a third that it's an antioxidant. So we were interested to look at the antioxidative properties of HDL. And this is important because in 2003, there was a study that was published where they took people who all had heart disease, and their mean HDL level was 95. And they assessed whether their HDL was pro-inflammatory, meaning it would contribute to heart disease development, or anti-inflammatory and prevent heart disease development. In every subject, it was pro-inflammatory, contributing to heart disease development. So the level of HDL itself might not be the main factor that we need to look at. So we were interested in this study to look at how does HDL function as an antioxidant.
And so, and this term, I correct me if I'm wrong, but this term is redox, right? Because it does something and it oxidizes something at the same time, right?
Right. So when we look at the whether something elicits production of free radicals or oxidative stress relative to the antioxidant capacity, we call that the redox status. So
okay.
We looked at the redox status of HDL. So in our assay that we performed, basically higher levels of oxidation of a chemical called dihydrorhodamine is associated with increased dysfunctional ability of HDL to perform its antioxidant property.
Did you look at the intensity of the two exercise groups?
We didn't. What we did was we did two things. Number one is we did questionnaires to assess their physical activity levels, which is common, and that bore out that both training groups were doing a lot more exercise than the untrained groups. But then we also did one repetition maximum test. So we did bench press, we did leg press, and we did back row. Then we added up the three numbers, and we divided by body weight to get a relative strength number.
Yeah.
And the relative strength of both trained groups was very similar and was higher than the relative strength of the untrained group. So not only did the two training groups have higher absolute strength, they also had higher relative strength to their body weight.
Awesome. And what was the relationship of the strength capacity and or training capacity to the cholesterol level?
So in terms of the HDL's
functions. I apologize. I got lost in my own thought there for a second. I'm a little ADHD.
Right, well,
I'm a little ADHD sometimes. I'm sorry.
We did actually in both groups. They actually had low. The trained groups both had lower total cholesterol, lower LDL, higher HDL, and lower triglycerides than the untrained group, regardless of whether they had the high or low BMI.
Okay.
And independent of the fact that. Independent on a group level, in terms of the, association between looking at, you know, what BMI category they fell in. So it didn't matter what BMI category they fell in, whether they were lean trained or overweight trained. If they did the 4 days a week of weight training, their lipid profile was better. When we took their HDL and we, tested how it functioned as an antioxidant, it did not matter whether they had a low or high BMI. If they were trained, they had better HDL function than if they were not trained.
That's amazing. So that flies completely in the face of what was previously thought, that when someone was overweight, their antioxidant capacity of the HDL was impaired.
Correct. You know, the conventional wisdom is that, you know, in order to get your HDL to go up, you need to lose weight. Well, if you have a high BMI and you do regular resistance training, your HDL was actually higher and your HDL function was actually better in terms of its ability to function as an antioxidant.
Well, and what this begs the medical community and the scientific community to start doing is to differentiate between, you know, when we stand on a scale, it gives us the effects of gravity on our body. It does not tell you what percentage of your body is muscle, bone, and fat. And we need to start understanding that muscle plays a role in health. And this is a great discussion right here. Because what's going to happen is, I mean, I remember a doctor telling me that I needed to lose weight because my BMI is like 31, 32. But I'm probably maybe in my fattest, you know, largest amount of fat carrying period of the year, I'm probably 15% body fat, and other times a year I'm closer to 10. And so you get no credit for how much of it is muscle in this day. They just tell you lose weight, your BMI is too high.
Yeah, and this goes back to what you were actually saying, you know, a little bit earlier, you know, that we're so focused on weight and BMI, and that's kind of one of the overriding concepts that I'm interested in studying in my lab, is trying to tease out the relative importance of fitness and body weight, because everyone thinks that, oh, well, if I'm overweight, I need to lose weight, and that's going to make me healthier. But that's not necessarily true. And then also, we really have to get away from just being concerned with what the number is on the scale and the BMI, because the BMI doesn't tell you the whole story. Regardless of whether you do a DEXA scan and you know your body composition, even if your body composition, I mean, there are studies that clearly show that even individuals that are obese by body composition standards who have high fitness have lower risk of mortality. So
Wow. That's
kind of what stimulated this whole line of research that I'm involved in now is to try and to figure out the relationship between body weight, BMI, body composition, and actual fitness. And most of the studies that have been done on this relationship have really focused on aerobic fitness. So in our study,
yes,
we were interested in strength fitness, because strength fitness is associated with more lean body mass, and more lean body mass is associated with a higher BMI.
Right. And interesting enough, there was a study that one of the first interviews I did in 2006, I want to say it was, where we started to draw this conclusion that stronger individuals live longer, and we're talking about all cause mortality rates, was a study that was done by the California Veterans Administration, and they followed 16,000 men, and they assessed their strength level with leg press and grip strength at the beginning of the period of time. I want to say the study was done over 21 or 24 years, and they followed these men and into their 70s and beyond, and every time they assessed them, they had them do the leg press and the grip strength. And what they came away from this study was that the men who were the strongest at the beginning of the study and maintained the greatest amount of strength throughout the study were still left standing at the end of the study. The rest of the guys who were weak from the beginning and got weaker, they died younger. Sooner. They died soon throughout the period of the study. And that was when it started to hit me that, you know, strength of an organism is strength of an organism. When we think of viruses, right? Oh, this virus is resistant to this antibiotic. That's a strong virus. Think about it. It lifts weights. It gets stronger. And we need to start thinking about the human condition the same way. Something that makes you physically stronger makes you systemically stronger as well. I love this kind of research. We have to take a break. When we come back, I've got lots more questions. We're talking with Dr. Christian Roberts. We're talking about recent research that shows that if you are physically trained, higher cholesterol levels may not be a threat to you, and what that means. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's keeping tabs on government health agencies.
It's called the Environmental Protection Agency.
Carl Lenore.
Where is the protection?
Superhuman Radio.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WheyNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WheyNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WheyNaturalUSA.com.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to superhumanradio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount. Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Dr. Christian Roberts has a website for those of you out on the West Coast who want to get a DEXA scan, relatively inexpensive, at a really, really reasonable price. UCLA EMDR.com. Is that right, Dr. Roberts?
That's correct, Carl. UCLAEMDR.com. We do DEXA scans. We do resting metabolic rate, VO2 max testing, and for individuals interested in their bone density, we also do bone mineral density testing.
Very cool. Okay, so what other markers did you look at? Did you look at any other markers? Did you look at any sex steroids, anything like that?
Yeah, this is the part that hasn't been published yet, and, you know, I'd love to come on with you again once we do get it published, but I'll give you a little bit of heads up that, I was interested to try to tease out, does a group of subjects who weight trains regularly and has a high BMI, do they have cardiovascular and metabolic, a cardiovascular metabolic profile that is more closely related to someone who's lean and trained or someone who is overweight and doesn't train? And so we did measurements of not only the lipids, but we did measurements of vascular function and arterial stiffness and blood pressure. We measured a lot of biomarkers in the blood related to type 2 diabetes and heart disease, and we did measure some hormones such as testosterone and SHBG. And except for the glucose and insulin, every variable that we measured was similar in the two trained groups, and both trained groups were better than the untrained group, irrespective of the BMI classification.
Can you talk about the insulin and for a second? How was that different in between the two trained groups?
So a little bit to our surprise, and contrary to all the other biomarkers that we measured, the insulin and the glucose were both lower in the lean trained group compared to both of the other two overweight groups. And we hypothesized that although the fasting levels of the glucose and insulin were higher in the overweight trained group relative to the lean trained group, that we didn't actually measure insulin sensitivity. And we do have another paper we just published, which we show that if we take the overweight untrained group and we train them with resistance training for 12 weeks, we don't see a change in fasting glucose or insulin, but we do see an improvement in their response to an oral glucose tolerance test. So the fasting level of glucose and insulin might not be telling us the whole story about how the training is altering their glycemic control.
In the overweight trained group, their blood sugar levels were higher and their insulin levels were higher?
Yes. Compared to the lean train group, yes.
But, you know, and I'm thinking about it, and it makes sense, and I'll tell you why. Anybody who trains very heavy, and we've talked about this in subsequent shows, training extremely heavy, which my audience probably does more so than the average audience that you'll be confronted with in a radio interview, because we have a lot of strength athletes and people who train like strength athletes, power lifters and so on. We know that it has the ability to disrupt blood sugar management, especially when you're really taxing the body, number one. But number two, I have to believe that most of those people that you worked with that have the higher BMI and are highly trained are adhering to a more bodybuilding type nutritional protocol where they're eating every 3 to 4 times, five times a day, every 3 to 4 hours. And I have to believe this puts a greater demand on pancreatic control of blood sugar. Now, it would be interesting to see you do some of these similar tests, some of these studies that you're doing now, and then look at people, something that we've started to do in this audience because of the messages we're getting from the evolutionary perspective, is intermittent fasting and training fasted. And I predict that if you take a guy like me, who is 235 pounds right now, 238, who I would fit into that group probably of the larger guys, because I carry a little bit more body fat than say somebody who's really, really lean. But I utilize intermittent fasting and I train fasted in the morning and then I have a huge meal post workout and then go to a couple more meals throughout the day. I have a feeling that my blood sugar levels and my insulin levels are going to be as low as the lean group. And I think this is affected completely by the nutritional protocol that a lot of these guys adhere to because they think that's the only way you can get big and strong. Is you eat every 3 hours and, you know, have a post-work, a pre-bedtime meal, and some of them even waking up in the middle of the night and having a shake.
Yeah, I mean, all those factors that you mentioned are plausible. It's also possible that, because we did see some variables that showed trends to being a little bit higher in the overweight train group relative to the lean train group, which may be related to, body fat content. Mm-hmm. And again, the overweight train did have more fat than the lean train. And so things like glucose and insulin and leptin might be a little higher for that mm-hmm. reason, mm-hmm. or some of the things that you mentioned. You are correct that, you know, and although we did have the subjects come in fasted, there is some evidence to suggest that eccentric contractions can disrupt insulin sensitivity after exercise. But that would have probably resulted in both of the trained groups having elevated glucose and insulin. So the difference between those two groups probably is not mediated by the prior exercise bout differences, but are probably related to something else. And we're interested in looking at that a little bit more in the future.
Yeah, because, you know, we talk about metabolic flexibility on this show a lot. You know, one of our evolutionary gifts is metabolic flexibility. And in an effort to maintain the ability of the body to use ketones as well as glucose, intermittent fasting has some benefits there. And for instance, me, my fasting blood sugar in the morning is 67, 69, 63, and I function quite well at those levels. And that, but it wasn't that way back in the day when I was following a more powerlifting protocol, and I was eating huge meals every 3 hours, and my carbohydrate intake was equally big, along with each meal. And I can tell you, my blood sugar levels back then were in the high 80s, low 90s. And I embraced insulin back then because I thought it was anabolic. But now I understand that insulin sensitivity is where the magic is, not how much insulin you pump out. And that's all arose from numerous shows that we've done on intermittent fasting and the benefits of intermittent fasting and training faster too. So I can see a lot of different directions you can go later on with this too.
Yeah, we are interested in definitely following up this research. We actually recently published another paper where we took lean and obese children and put them through a diet and exercise intervention. Again, the conventional wisdom would be, you know, obesity caused all the metabolic and cardiovascular abnormalities like increases in glucose and insulin, increases in blood pressure, and increases in lipids. And it didn't matter whether the kids were lean and quote-unquote healthy body weight or whether they were obese. They both responded identical to the intervention.
Interesting, interesting. So when will this next study be ready for you to talk about?
Well, we plan on submitting it actually this month, and you know, if we get lucky in the peer review process, I think we'll probably be able to have it published hopefully by the beginning of next year.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, just out of curiosity, do you train?
Yes, I do. I actually grew up in high school as a cross country and track runner. And then when I was in grad school, I kind of stopped doing the whole running thing and switched over to weight training and actually went from and put on quite a significant amount of lean body mass. And at this point, I do train, you know, 5 to 6 days a week. My workouts are pretty short. I try to keep them under an hour.
Right.
And I've, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, ward off the aging process.
How old are you?
I'm 42.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're way ahead. That's good. You started that. Just curious. Did you notice that your legs really grew rapidly? I have two people that I know that used to do distance running, in high school, that then started to train as either bodybuilders and or powerlifters, and their legs exploded. And I was wondering if that's a result of some sort of fiber differentiation that occurs when you are a distance runner and then transitions to fast twitch muscle fibers, that they experience a greater degree of upper leg growth. Have you experienced that? Do you have very, very unusually thick upper legs?
No, I don't, but I think that response may be predicated, you know, based upon, you know, the genetic differences in the fiber type, and some cross country runners, you know, have very high levels of type 1 fibers, and others, which I might fall into myself, probably had more type 2As. And because of that, I might have been, you know, able to respond to some degree to both aerobic and resistance training. But, you know, being a graduate student at the time and having, you know, read the literature and, you know, back then reading a lot of online publications as well and magazines, you know, I was in the whole loop with respect to, you know, peri-workout nutrition and supplementation and all that. So, you know, all of that probably contributed. But now I'm at the point where, I'm more concerned with, you know, trying to keep my metabolic health intact and just try to ward off the aging process.
Just follow strength. That's what we talk about on this show constantly. I am a huge, you know what? I'd rather be strong than look strong. And I think that the stronger you are and the, and you get to that point. I mean, I'm 55 and my objective is after this hamstring operation, I just tore, femurus and semitendinous, bicep muscles in my left hamstring deadlifting a few weeks ago. And, I'm going in to have them reattached to the bone. They evolve, what do they call it? Evulsion, something. But anyway, they pulled off the bone. But I mean, I'm doing that. I mean, I can get by without doing it, quite frankly. I mean, okay, it's a little uncomfortable. I have this little ball. I have like 6 centimeters of retraction in these muscles in my, and actually my hamstring muscle bellies look better now all of a sudden because I've got this thick hanging hamstring. I mean, I'm having them reattached now because I am not interested in, well, I'll just train legs lighter from now on and, you know, I probably won't deadlift. No, I intend to squat, I intend to deadlift, and I intend to do that for the rest of my life. And my objective now is to maintain the strength that I've developed as long as I can because I know that that's going to carry me through. So I'm with you, man. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, there actually is a some of the data that you were talking about before, the relationship between mortality and strength, you know, there are studies actually to show that that's independent of lean body mass. So it's really the muscle quality probably that's more important than the muscle quantity.
Yes,
that we need to be concerned with.
And you're getting into, as Adele Moussa pointed out when I was complaining like, oh man, I wonder if I'll be able to squat as heavy as I used to. And he said, don't worry about it. You'll come back fine because mature muscle actually has the ability to come back much faster than youthful muscle. So You have mature muscle on your side now. Thank you. Listen, it's been a pleasure having you on the show and I hope you'll come back on.
Yes, Carl, I would like to. And thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, check out his website. It's UCLAEMDR.com. If you're in the California area and you're interested in having a DEXA scan and have your body checked out for your metabolic rate and so on, then, of course, also thank you to Dr. Alexandros. I got to get his last name right because it's Vagansa for coming on and talking about the effects of burning the candle at both ends all week long and then trying to catch up on your sleep during the weekend. I'm sorry. Obviously not a prescription for good things. We'll see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Thank you as always for listening.
Not only does he poke holes in corporate lies, he tears them a new one.
All of the associated companies that say that the GMO labeling is unfair to them cite that it would cost too much money to change the label on the box. But meanwhile, they spend millions and millions fighting labeling. Why don't they just use that money to label the boxes?
His name is Carl Lenore.
And keep in mind, Madeira, the province of Portugal, Switzerland, India, and Thailand have all banned, B-A-N-N-E-D, the sale and growth of genetically modified foods in their countries because they prefer to wait for more research to come out before they subject their citizens to it.
On Superhuman Radio.
Everybody deserves to know what they're eating. This is nonsense.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.